Bold. Brave. With Dr. Pam Peake.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peake, and this is episode number 551 of the Bold and the Brave Her podcast. Now, today I'm joined by someone you are absolutely going to love. I am enamored by how badly people walk and the fact they know nothing about their shoes, and that this guy, Stephen Sashin, oh my gosh, Stephen is the founder of Zero Shoes. Now, how cool is that? You couldn't tell because he's wearing that t-shirt, but he's the founder of Zero Shoes, and he is actually a serial entrepreneur who is proud to say he's never had a job. He's a former professional stand-up comic, which is why we get along so well, because you all know that if medicine doesn't work, there's always stand-up. An award-winning screenwriter and a competitive sprinter, one of the fastest men over 60 in the country. I mean, can you just say? And he's going to tell us about the development of the Zero Shoes company, what it's all about, what this barefoot thing is all about. And you all know that I'm a runner. I'm a senior Olympic triathlete. So I've done my share of marathons and whatever. And I've had a hell of a time trying to find a damn shoe that will really kind of work. So we're going to be talking about all of that. He and his wife, Lena Phoenix, co-founded Zero Shoes, and he's creating a movement. What the hell is that? Stephen, welcome to the Her podcast.
Well, first of all, thank you. And I'm so excited because I didn't realize this. 551 is my lucky number.
Get out. You're so full of crap. No, is there like some nanogram or, you know, some weird thing that goes along with that? Well, who knows?
Yeah.
Anyway, you have to go to X and, you know, look it up. And there's always somebody writing about some weird number or something. So I am so excited to see you. I'm going to tell everyone how I really discovered Steve and the Zero Shoes. And that was because one of my colleagues, you know, I've been on the board of the American College of Sports Medicine. Steve and his company were kind enough to gift us with a wonderful donation to help support our research and our services for all things sports medicine and physical activity. And so shout out to Zero Shoes for doing that. And we'll be back for more. No, but just kidding. Oh my gosh, she didn't really say that. So that being said, that's how we all got together. And then Irene would say, who she's my fellow board member, would say, you've got to meet this guy. And these shoes are to die for. And you've got to learn, because she is a physical therapist. And she's all about spreading your toes out and making sure that you're working your ligaments and tendons and everything in your feet instead of everything getting all squished inside of a little nasty shoe that doesn't work for you. So I was utterly intrigued. And so I looked you up and I found a YouTube video that, I mean, seriously, I could not put it down. You were out there, you know, basically barefooting, and it was wild. You were just showing how everyone walks poorly. They don't get it. And you did it in such a clear and articulate way. I was absolutely dumbfounded. I'm like, damn, we got to get him to help all of us on the Her podcast walk. So first, Steve, tell me what, I mean, look at all the stuff you have. The screenwriter and stand-up comic, that stuff. No, you know what we call that? Talent stacking.
I call it, they didn't have Ritalin when I was a kid. So I've
and
been.
Now they have Adderall.
I tried it. It doesn't work for me. I've been really, really lucky that I've spent my life, just being able to go from one thing that I find interesting to the next and been able to make a living doing that, but more helping people along the way in various ways, even doing stand-up. I mean, that's a way of helping people, I would argue. But I want to back up to your mentioning Irene, because she's much more than a physical therapist, of course, but I'll tell a part of her story that she often doesn't tell, which is, how did she become the den mother of natural movement? How did she become the person who's leading the charge for getting people to understand the right way to move, starting feet first? Because those things at the end of your legs, what's interesting, people will go to the gym and, you know, try to make everything strong from their ankles up and ignore everything from the ankles down, which supports everything from the ankles up. So Irene, when she was a PT and still like, and teaching people as well, had this realization. It's like, you know, when someone comes in for physical therapy, we try to get them moving as much as they can safely, given whatever limitations they have. And we do that with every part of their body, except their feet. When somebody comes in and they have a foot problem or something that the feet could be causing the problem in the ankles, knees, hips, back, et cetera, we immobilize them. We put an orthotic in there. We make it so they can't move. Now, that's an interesting thing, because I like to say to people, which is better? This is a stupid question I'm about to ask, like really stupid, not a trick question. I'll ask people, which is better for your body, weaker or stronger? And then they hesitate. And I have to say again, it's not a trick question. So, and they go, okay, stronger. I go, cool. So let's talk about your arm. If you want to make your arm weaker, how do you do that? And they'll say, don't use it. I go, right. If you put a cast around your elbow, so you are supporting that joint, keyword, and then all the muscles, ligaments, and tendons around that joint that's being supported get weaker. And you just said weaker isn't better. What happens when you have 33 joints in each foot and you put an orthotic in there or just a stiff shoe that doesn't let your foot bend? What's happening to all those muscles, ligaments, and tendons around those 33 joints? And what problems might that be causing for you at the end of the day or the month or the year or the however long? And usually that makes people go, oh. So the walking thing is similar. And let me actually put a giant umbrella over the conversation. While my wife and I have started a footwear company to support all these ideas, well, I don't want to use the word support the wrong way, to encourage all these ideas that we know are helpful.
That's right.
We're not talking about footwear. We're talking about proper form. We're talking about using your body the way it's designed to be used properly, instead of getting in the way with things that actually literally have been proven to cause the problems that the big companies are using and claiming that they are the solution for. So that's the context. So what was your question?
You know, this is the way this whole interview is going to go.
Yeah, probably.
We're just going to be like, you know, like on a hike, we just take a little trip over here and then we come back again and whatever. No, I mean, why did you start zero?
That. So let's see, I'm 63 years old now. 18 years ago, I had to do the math that way, I got back into sprinting after a 30-year break, and I spent the next 2 years getting injured pretty much constantly. I don't think I had more than 2 weeks in a row where I wasn't injured in some way. And at the end of that 2 years, a friend of mine who is a world champion cross-country runner, A, handed me a copy of the book Born to Run, which even if you're not a runner, phenomenal read. My wife is not a runner. She couldn't put it down. So highly recommend
it. I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
It's just a great book about the Tarahumara Indians in Mexico who run exceedingly long distances in sandals made from a scrap of tire laced to their foot, and how they won the two Leadville races. Actually, the first Leadville race, which is the highest marathon in the country, they won the first year they did it. The second year they had a shoe sponsor, and they started out wearing the shoes, and after a couple miles, couldn't wear them, threw them off, and finished the whole thing barefoot, and they won. So it's about them, but it's also just about the story of the author, Chris McDougall, who was an always injured runner, becoming not injured, and the first ultramarathon down in the Copper Canyon of Mexico with the Tarahumara, and the science of about natural movement as well. So he handed me the book and suggested that I run barefoot to see if I learned anything. And what I learned when I did my first barefoot run is that, well, first of all, running barefoot, good form feels good, bad form hurts. And so on this first barefoot run, I'm just experimenting with my gait to find a way that felt good or felt right. And when I say experiment, I tried everything I could think of. I tried running faster with the same cadence, the same number of steps per minute. I tried running slower with the same cadence. I tried the same speed with a different cadence. I tried landing on different parts of my foot. I tried taking off, I mean, everything I could think of. And at the end of this run, now I'm a sprinter. I've never run more than a mile of my own volition, and I've hated everything after the first 200 meters. So at the end of this barefoot run, where we were on grass and then on trails and on roads and on everything surface you could think of in Colorado, I said to somebody, because I was just transfixed the whole time. I was really just totally engaged with this experiment. And I had no idea how long we were out or what we had done. And I said to someone who had a GPS watch, how long was that? And she said, that's a little over 5K. I just went, what? Because I could have kept going. We just all stopped as a group. So that was part one, was I was just fascinated. Part two was about a half an hour later, I realized I had a giant blister on the ball of my left foot. Now, many people would say, oh, this is bullshit because like I got a blister. I, for whatever reason, said, huh, how come my right foot's fine? And oh yeah, my left leg is the one that gets injured more often. So what's up with that? And the next week, we did another barefoot run and I had a gaping hole in the ball of my left foot. And I figured if I could find a way to run that didn't hurt, I probably wasn't doing the thing that caused the problem to begin with. Give it 10 minutes. If it doesn't work, I'll either give it up or I'll try again later, whatever, I don't know. 9 minutes and 30 seconds of agony later, but at the 9:31 mark, everything changed, literally in one stride. And I'll tell you what happened in a moment. But the key is my running got faster, easier, lighter, felt good. I felt like I could have gone forever. And within a couple of weeks, my injuries were gone. I was getting faster. I've been a Masters All-American sprinter, one of the fastest guys in the country in my age group for the last 15 years. And what I discovered, and this relates to walking too, and for anyone watching, pardon the beam of light that I can't make go away, or maybe it's a sign, I don't know. But suffice it to say, what I discovered is that I had been overstriding. So I was reaching out with my left foot, and because sprinters are supposed to land on the ball of your foot, pointing my toes to land on the ball of my foot, and just putting a whole bunch of friction right at that one spot that caused a blister, because that's what causes blisters, friction or heat. But my gait changed from that one barefoot run, never went back, and here we are. And I wanted that barefoot experience as much as I could have it. But my wife got tired of me walking into our white carpeted house with my dirty ass bare feet. And I got tired of arguing with restaurants about whether it was legal to go in there in bare feet, which by the way, it is. So I made a pair of sandals similar to the ones that Tarahumara wear in the Copper Canyon. I found some rubber from a shoe repair place. I got some cord from Home Depot. I figured out a 10,000-year-old tying system, laced them up, made some pairs for about a couple dozen other barefoot runners. And one day, one of the barefoot running coaches said, I've got a book coming out on barefoot running. And if you treated this little sandal making hobby of yours like a business, I could put you in my book. Now, I've been an internet marketer since 1992. I built hundreds of websites. So I rushed home with this brilliant idea to share with my wife, who told me I was a complete idiot, and she knows me well, and said, it's a waste of time and money. It'll interfere with this other business we had started. It won't make any money. Just do not build a website. And I agreed with her. I told her I definitely would not build a website. And she went to bed and I built a website. And
of course. I mean, you know, wiping shock off face. Sure. So, absolutely.
Yeah. Now she kind of growled at me the next morning, and I said, it'll be a case study for one of our businesses. And very quickly it became clear from the response we were getting from our customers that it was much more than a case study. We were onto something. I mean, our first customers kept using the phrase life-changing, and that was 16 years and a few months ago, where at that time we had a do-it-yourself sandal making kit that we were selling. And now we have 70 plus different styles of casual and performance shoes, boots, and sandals that people wear for everything from walk on the beach to slippers around the house to hiking Kilimanjaro to going to work to playing in the NBA and WNBA.
Okay. So seriously, if you go to the website for Zero Shoes, I'll show you what I'm craving. And of course, I went to REI and they didn't have it. And I went home crying.
Pam, I know a guy who knows a guy who knows where they park the truck.
Okay. I'm just saying.
So
my favorite one is this super colorful Beyond, you know the one I'm talking about, the HFS Original Women.
Yeah.
It's got like, it looks like screaming green, some pinky red, aqua, blah, blah.
It's a lot of color.
And maybe it was like a yellowish instead of green. I don't know. All I know is I crave it. I just crave.
Well, I got to tell you, when people tell me that they love that shoe, and it was the first running shoe that we developed back in about 2017-ish, we had to come up with a name. And I said, why don't we just go with what every one of the wear testers said when we asked them what they thought of the shoe? And it was three words starting with the word holy. I'll just leave it at that.
Oh, God, I love it. So basically, we got four-letter words all over. We got an F-bomb, an S-bomb, and it starts with a holy. So that's the way it should be. So I was trying to figure out where HF, you know, it sounded kind of like technical. Like
some people will say highly flexible sole, which it is. They'll say happy face shoe because that's what happens when you put them on and your toes aren't getting squeezed together and your posture isn't all messed up. Yeah, people have come up with a lot of ideas, but then I tell them what the reality is.
Okay, now we've got all these beautiful, wonderful women out there listening in, and they're saying, you know, I'm wearing kind of like cushiony shoes, and you hear the internet, I mean, whether it's TikTok or, you know, Dr. Google or whomever, it's just a bunch of conflicting advice with people saying, well, cushion is where it's at, you should be protecting your feet, et cetera. And then other people saying, cushion, what are you, crazy or something? And then you've got the rolling forward guys, you know, those are the Hokas and the rest of them.
So I'm going to interrupt and change a word because it's not advice, it's opinions.
Opinion.
And the research could not be more clear. What we're doing is good for you and what they're doing is bad for you. Now, I can explain all of the whys because it's counterintuitive. I mean, this is the thing. Because, you know, when you sit on something cushioned or feel something cushioned, it feels good, but that doesn't mean it's good for you. So let me actually start with a simple thing. Almost every shoe you're going to buy right now has, I'm going to hold up a shoe as an example, has a pointy toe box. And I like to say to people, is that the shape of your foot? Because if it is, it's not supposed to be. And what problems might you feel at the end of the day, for example, when you've just been squeezing your toes together for all this time? And then people will tell me about how they love to kick off their shoes and how, you know, they're always fine. I mean, whatever it is, it's like, that's just not normal. Your toes aren't supposed to be squeezed together. In fact, if you just push your big toe in, it cuts off some of the circulation to your entire foot, which I hear is not good for you. So let's just start there. Now let's have an interesting talk about, before I get to cushioning, let me talk about two other things. And I'll ask you this question, and this is putting you to the test, but don't worry, I'm sure you'll pass. Which is better, being aware of things happening with your body or being oblivious to things?
Okay, this is another one of those, you know, it's kind of obvious, stupid and, you know, what's going on? Well, obviously being aware of your body, we actually call it interoceptive.
Yes. Yes. I love that you did that because people often talk about proprioception because they think it's the same as interoception, which is not. But that's one of our personal pet peeves. Like I hate when people say very unique. It's either one of a kind or it's one of a kind. So anyway, all right, I'm going to ask you a second question. You have 200,000 nerve endings in the sole of each foot. Why?
Oh my goodness gracious. So you want to have nerve endings in the sole to be able to A, give you a sense of where you are, right? Two, to be able to give you feedback because the nerve network, you know, will go right back up to the brain and the brain will say, what the heck are you doing with your damn foot already? And this is also why when you get massage in your feet, it resonates in other parts of your body. So you're getting constant feedback, both about pain, comfort, discomfort, everything. You're just getting this whole panoply of
information.
Basically, exactly.
And your brain uses that to help you figure out how to best move across or over whatever surface you're running or walking or moving across or over. So the question is, how much can you feel with one of those big, thick, heavily cushioned shoes?
Not a hell of a lot.
What problems might that cause when you're stepping on things that are uneven or you're not getting information to your brain?
You don't know. And so you'll injure yourself.
Right. So let's go back. And now there's one other thing. Most of those shoes, okay, here I'll do another stupid question. Which is better, proper alignment or misalignment?
Well, obviously, proper.
I know. I can't even find a good, you know, way to do those two words.
You're going to have to work on this.
I know. Yeah,
there's
a tricky
no question.
One. I think I had one once, but I can't remember. Anyway, suffice it to say, so almost every one of those shoes elevates your heel. Now, if you elevate your heel even a tiny bit, it's tipping you a little bit forward. And then you have to adjust with your hips, your knees, your ankles, your back some way to be properly aligned so you don't fall on your face. That ain't good. is the simplest way I can put it, because you're literally putting strain on muscles, ligaments, and tendons that are designed to just help your body be stacked properly so you don't need to use all that effort to be properly aligned.
Okay, now the question is, this is very popular, the whole HOKA thing.
Oh, yeah.
So it's leaning forward. Is that good? Bad?
No.
Okay.
It's not good. Well, there's two things that you just highlighted. The leaning forward, wait, I'm going to come back to them because you mentioned one about the whole rocking thing. I'm going to do the world's fastest physics lesson, and hopefully it'll jog a memory for people because it requires that. There's a slow motion movie that was made back in the early days of movies. You can find it online. Many people have seen it. Of this big, like, you know, guy at a, like, it looked like a circus, about a 350, 400 pound guy who takes a cannonball to the stomach. That was his thing. He just got hit with a cannonball, getting shot out of a cannon. And it's an amazing thing. What happens, the cannonball hits him and he kind of bends over it. And then the fat you see rippling out in slow motion, and that's absorbing the pressure from the cannonball. But the force sends this 300, 400 pound guy flying back into a tarp to catch him. So cushioning can feel good because it's spreading the pressure out. So it's technically the sort of the waves of pressure are wider than your feet ability to sense the pressure properly. So it feels nice. It feels a little squishy. It feels good. But the force still has to go somewhere. So if you're landing hard, especially on your heel with your foot slightly outstretched in front of you, your leg is pretty straight and that force is going into your ankle, your knee, your hip, your back. And those joints are not designed to handle that force. Whichever is the weakest link in the chain is going to suffer, and worse, because they don't have the same sensory mechanisms that your feet do, you won't notice it till it's too late. You won't know until you have a real problem.
Can I have a quick question here?
Of course.
How does all of this, the cushioning, the force going forward, the rocking, all that stuff, what is that doing to posture? Because posture is
correct.
So important.
So again, you know, I was thinking about this last night of trying to come up with a good visual for this, where I was just imagining if you took a yardstick and just balanced it on something where you could lift the back up a millimeter, if you lift up the back a millimeter, the whole thing will tip over. So what it's doing to your posture is here's the simplest thing I can say. If you've been wearing a higher heeled shoe of any sort and you take them off and just stand upright, and then someone actually looks at you and moves your body to what's actually vertical, you're going to say, "Ooh, I feel like I'm going to fall backwards," because you're so used to, you've adapted to this forward posture. One of the things your brain does, which is kind of good, kind of bad, is if you subject it to a certain kind of stress over time, it will eventually acclimate and not tell you you're doing the wrong thing. So if you're wearing a higher heeled shoe, and I literally mean by just a millimeter or two, that's all it takes, you're going to acclimate to the effort that you're putting into adjusting so that you're able to be upright without falling on your face. But that's not good. And it's not even good for running or for walking as well. For walking, if you are, like what many people do when they're standing to adjust for the fact that they've tipped forward, is they lean back from their hips. So their hips are still forward, but the rest of them is slightly behind. And we'll get to the walking part in a second. But the only way you can walk if you've kind of leaned back at your hips or leaned back from your back is kind of by kicking your feet out in front of you, because you don't have the effort that it takes to do hip extension to push backwards. It's just too much effort. It's easier to kick out in front of you. And that, we'll find out in a moment, is not good.
Okay, now hold on. Hold that thought. When we come back, we're going to pick this up with Steve, and we're going to get down to the whole issue of walking and another critical issue. If you've gotten acclimated to the cushiony sneakers, how do you now acclimate to barefoot walking? You know, those beautiful Zero shoes. All right, when we come back. The Her Podcast is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs, all rooted in nature. In addition to women's multivitamins, Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, is presenting the new Her Life Stages products, providing support for the menstrual years, including PMS, perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, and even libido. This integrative holistic approach has a woman's back throughout her entire life journey. To learn more about Her Life Stages, you've got options. You can run on over to your local health food store or check it out at Whole Foods, Sprouts, Amazon, or scroll over to solaray.com and use promo code HER20 for 20% off your purchase. Women, Solaray's got your back. And we're back. All right. So which one do you want to take first? Do you want to take the poor walking situation or the how long does it take to adapt to,
walking first.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay. So the simplest thing I can say about walking, actually, wait, I'm going to back up and do something totally tangential. Many people will say if what you're doing, this whole natural movement thing, letting your toes spread, letting your feet be not elevated, that rocker thing, that's only there because the shoe is so stiff that if you didn't have a rocker in it, every time you'd walk, it would sound like this. You'd have duck feet. So if the shoe is stiff, you need to have that rocker. Otherwise, you won't be able to walk properly. The shoe companies will claim that's helping propel you forward. I was actually on a panel discussion at the American College of Sports Medicine, and a guy from Brooks said just that next to me. And I grabbed the mic from him and I said, do you mind if I'm obnoxious for a second? And he goes, sure. I said, nothing propels you forward except your goddamn legs. And then I hand the mic back to him. I said, you can't violate the laws of physics. And he goes, all right, we're not trying to violate the laws of physics. So, cool. Anyway, so there's that. But people will say, why aren't the big companies doing this? I will tell you two things. One, executives at every one of these companies have said either directly to my face or directly to someone that I know, what Zero Shoes is doing, this natural movement idea, it's for real. But if we did it, we'd be admitting we've been lying for the last 50 years. And Nike has actually done research showing that different shoe designs have different injury rates. And the shoe that they made that had a lower injury rate than their best-selling shoe, what made it better was they got rid of, quote, many of the protective features. They made it more like what we're doing, but not enough. They still injured between 14.5% and 30% of the runners wearing both each of these shoes in under 12 weeks. And if we injured 14.5% to 30% of people wearing our shoes in 12 months, I wouldn't have a wall of shoes behind me. I'd have bars from a jail cell in front of me. So let's I'll come back to that. Suffice it to say, they all know, bottom line. Okay, the walking thing. If you watch people walk in different countries and different cultures, you'll notice they have a different gait pattern. And often it has to do with the footwear they're wearing or not wearing. Again, if you're walking or running barefoot, good form feels good, bad form hurts. So the easiest thing I could say is take off your shoes. Find a smooth but not perfectly smooth surface, maybe a little, you know, irritating, and just go for a really short walk and just see what changes. See what happens, and you'll find things that are not unpleasant. Like if you're running, if you have been someone who overstrides and heel strikes, if you take off your shoes, landing on the back part of your heel will hurt. It's supposed to, because that's not the way you're supposed to be moving. So again, if you're leaning back a little to adjust for that elevated heel, you're going to be kicking your feet out in front of you. You're going to be landing typically heel first with your leg relatively straight. Running shoe companies have been for years trying to tell you that that's what you're supposed to do. Land on your heel, roll onto your foot, and that the longer your stride is, the better. That research is very clear that's not true. Again, pressure versus force. If you're landing on your heel with a straight leg, all that force is going somewhere. It's going into your body, into a weak place. All the foam that is designed to try to protect you. There's so many things I can say about foam. Here's an easy one. Any bit of foam is tuned to a weight and speed. It's optimal at a particular, if you're a particular weight moving at a particular speed. And if you're neither of those, it's going to mess you up. And I guarantee you are neither of those. Bottom line. So there's that problem. So this landing with your foot way out in front of you is non-optimal for a really simple reason. You have a couple of really, really big muscles that you rarely get to see because they're behind you. It's your butt and your hamstrings. They're called prime movers for a reason. Now's a perfect time if you're watching the Olympics or watch recordings, watch speed skaters. They are pushing behind them to move forward. They have their planted foot is on a skate underneath their center of mass, and then they're pushing behind them. That's how they move forward. Now, we can do the same thing.
And that's where they get those big butts.
They do. Can I tell you a really fun story?
Go for it.
One of my best friends from high school is a cross-country runner. She ended up in medical school with Eric Heiden, former Olympic speed skater, and they ran together. and just, you know, trained together, ran together. Then they were entered a cross-country race, and my friend completely destroyed him. And he was stunned. He said, you know, what just happened? I mean, every time we're running, you're behind me. She goes, yeah, so I can stare at your butt, you idiot.
Oh, no, there's no question about it. Well, here's my Eric Heiden thing. He was actually, as it were, one of my interns, residents at the University of California, where he was in his training to be an orthopedic surgeon. So needless to say, every single nurse, all the female doctors, everyone, we just adjusted our on-call schedules and, you know, told the guys that, no, I'll take it tonight. No, no problem whatsoever. And I'm going to, you know, be spending a lot of time in the ortho ward. You know, they need us a lot and whatever. I mean, he was, needless to say, a magnificent athlete.
Oh, yeah.
You know, real eye candy, too.
Yeah. Yeah, there I was going to say, it was more than just the female nurses who were interested in him.
Oh, he's, everyone. Oh, yeah. My God.
And his sister, also amazing for the exact same reasons. Okay, so this is a tricky thing to do by just describing it, which is why I've got a video on our website. If you go to the website, there's an explorer section, and under there is this thing about walking the natural way. I'm going to describe this thing and people can try to do it. So what we're going to try and do is use our glutes and hamstrings to move us forward the way they're designed to, in a way that is more effortless and puts less strain on your body. Let's your feet give your brain the information that it needs to actually use the muscles, ligaments, and tendons around the ankle, the knee, and the hip as joint stabilizers and protectors, which is one of those or two of those functions, so you can be more efficient. It will feel weird because you're not used to it. It will be a little slower than you're used to. So what? But if you adjust to it, you're going to find that walking is a whole lot easier and running is going to be very similar. So here's the instruction that I give people. Stand up, lift your left foot an inch off the ground. Then, as if you're speed skating and pushing your right foot behind you, that's what you want to do. And don't do anything with your left foot. Don't move it in front of you. Just let it hang there. And don't worry, you won't fall on your face because at the last second, it will hit the ground. Your brain will protect you from landing on your face. And the moment you hit the ground, if you look, you'll notice that you've landed A, kind of flat-footed or maybe starting on the ball of your, the outside edge of the ball of your foot, maybe, but it'll be pretty much underneath your center of mass. It'll be under you instead of way out in front of you. And then you're going to lather, rinse, and repeat. Now you have your left foot on the ground. You're going to relax your right leg. You don't need to swing it forward. It'll come forward as soon as you take it off the ground. You don't need to do anything, but then push back with your left leg. Don't let your right leg kind of kick out in front of you and let it also just plop on the ground underneath your center of mass. And now lather, rinse, and repeat and do that again. You will be walking like Frankenstein's monster. That's okay. But you just want to get this whole feeling of pushing out of the back. Now, if you really want to have fun, take one of your hands, like when your right foot is planted on the ground and is going to be pushing you, put it on your butt and see when it's pushing if you can feel your butt actually engaged. If not, that ain't good. You want to be using it. See if you can actually like squeeze your butt and make it tense. If you haven't been aware of it, you want to feel what's going on back there. In fact, if this is tricky for you, exaggerate doing it wrong. Kick your foot way out in front of you and let it land on your heel and then push your way and kind of pogo your way over that one so you can feel what wrong feels like and then go back to doing it this way. One foot barely off the ground, the other foot is pushing behind you like you're skating. Don't do anything with that leading foot, that swing leg is what we call it. Let it just naturally hit the ground and then repeat. And then the next step, once you get used to it looking like a robot, just try to smooth it out a little bit. Take slightly smaller steps, maybe whatever. Just see what it takes to smooth it out a little bit. Now, if you want the advanced lesson, there's a really cool thing you can do. Find a small uphill. And you want to do this same thing with a twist, literally with a twist. So when you're pushing back with that right foot, twist your upper body slightly to the left. Then your left foot's going to land. And you want to start by twisting your body slightly to the right. Now, what's going to happen is that right hip flexor has been stretched a little bit when it was on the ground pushing you. And by twisting, it can release like a spring and it'll come forward just a little bit and it will land slightly in front of you because you're going uphill without you having to do anything. Just by twisting and letting that stretch spring of your right hamstring or of your right hip flexor go, it'll come up. And then
I remember you were doing this in the video.
Right.
In the YouTube video, you were going up a hill, not a horrible incline or anything,
but
I could see you using that.
Yeah.
You know,
you're just literally like twisting your way up the hill. And Now, if you want to have the advanced thing, you can do a little version of the same thing when you're walking on a flat surface. There's still that little bit of twist that will allow you to make it even more effortless. So over time, what you'll find once you get used to it is you can walk for longer. It will take less effort. You will feel like you're actually using muscles that are the right muscles to use. And this brings us to the whole transition question. So the umbrella comment that I can make when you're talking about transitioning to natural movement, because again, that's what we're talking about, not about footwear, it's about doing what's natural, is that you want to think of it like going to the gym if you haven't been to the gym in a long time. Like if you haven't been to the gym in a year, or if you've never been, you're going to go back to or start with an embarrassingly small amount of weight for an embarrassingly small number of reps for one set. And then you're going to go home. And the next day, you're going to see how you feel. And if you feel like some muscular soreness because you just worked hard, and maybe it'll take you 36 hours for it to kick in. For me, it's like 48 hours is when it's the worst. Like I did leg day this morning on a Monday. By Wednesday, I'm going to need help getting on and off the toilet.
There you go. Aging's a bitch.
It's true. So see how you feel the next day. And if it feels like you just did a little too much because you're a little sore, then wait till you feel good. Go back and do whatever it was again, but do a little less. So we like to say you don't want to do too much too soon. But the joke is the only way you know you did too much too soon is when you did too much too soon.
So if someone were to buy the Zero shoe,
yeah,
like I'm craving the
HFS.
HFS. Now I can't even say it without laughing my ass off. Now that I know what it really stands for, I thought it was some technical term, and of course it wasn't. Should they like maybe wear it for an hour? And then
exactly.
Just,
so if you're mostly just standing, give yourself an hour. If you're walking, do 20 minutes. If you're running, like 20 seconds, literally. And then for runners in particular, if the next day you feel more than sore, if you feel like you did something wrong, then you want to wait till you feel okay. And what you want to go back to is you want to think about a few things. You want to think about having your feet land under you, the same way we're talking about walking. So you don't want to, there's an easy way to think about doing this. Like what you want to do to move forward is lift your foot off the ground. That's it. So just like lifting your foot that little bit off the ground while you have a tiny forward lean. And so you're not trying to kick your foot out in front of you. And I want you to run like crazy slow, embarrassingly slow. Looks like you could be walking much faster because you could. If, for example, I'll start the same way. You have your right foot on the ground. You lift your left foot, this time enough off the ground so that if you can relax your foot, your toe is about an inch off the ground. And then this is going to sound counterintuitive and impossible. While standing in place, not running in place, lift your right foot off the ground. And you're going to go, how can I lift it off the ground? It's the thing that's balancing me. It's like, trust me, you can. And what will happen is you will naturally end up landing on your left foot, on the ball of your foot, or midfoot.
Here's my little story. So I was preparing for my last, thank you, God, my last marathon, which was the Boston. And that was, so I was training in 2011 and into 2012, because as you know, Boston's in, you know, a little later in the spring. And I can remember exactly, it was November of 2011. Now, there was a company that was in existence then. I'm not sure it's in existence anymore. It was pushing out the sort of barefoot running thing. And, you know, it was like a thing then. So it was a while ago. And all of us looked at each other. No one had your level of knowledge.
Right.
And no one was, you know, advising. They were instead opining based upon God knows what. And I stupidly bought a pair. I thought, well, maybe, you know, whatever in the beginning. Whoa. So I kind of injured my right foot. And that
what kind of injury?
Yeah, it was my fifth metatarsal.
Okay, got it. Perfect.
Right. And so I immediately said, you know, I went to my coach and we were fine. I mean, I eventually got right back into the training and stuff. And, you know, I just didn't understand. And of course, what did I do? Right. I had already been running, you know, and I just slapped the suckers on and I just ran. And nobody said ease into it and
right.
Take 20 minutes and do this kind of thing. No one said a word.
No, no, no. In those early days, look, let's back up. What footwear companies and many other companies have convinced us of, especially here in the United States and in the West, and this is spreading, is all you need to do is get the right product and everything else is fine. You don't need to change. It's all about this magical product. So if you've been running in a traditional running shoe, especially if you've been told you're supposed to land on your heel and then roll forward, et cetera. And you want your stride way out in front of you, which if you look at any Olympic runner, that's not how they run. Their stride is mostly behind them. They're landing with their feet underneath them really well. But we've been given the story that all you need is the right shoe. And that's the way the shoes are advertised. It's our new amazing cushioning. Never do they say, sorry about that shit we've been selling for the last 5 years. It's always some new and amazing thing.
But what are these Olympians wearing? I keep seeing these like, we now have a super shoe and, you know, you'll fly. And
it depends. First of all, who gives a shit? And I'll tell you why. Other than you, and even you, I'll say this, when someone says, well, that's the shoe that so-and-so wore when he ran, you know, broke the 2-hour marathon. I go, okay, are you a 105-pound Kenyan who's going to run a 2-hour marathon? And they go, no. I go, then what do you care what that guy's wearing? It has no relevance for you at all. The super shoe thing is interesting in a number of ways. What they realized is the thing that's, there's two things that are going on. First of all, it's not the carbon fiber. Let me just do this one really quickly. If someone says you, oh, it's got a carbon plate. Again, who cares? The carbon plate is in there. Because that super thick foam, there's a name for that foam in the industry. The name is supercritical foam. Supercritical is a term that came from nuclear physics. That means something's about to blow. So that foam is really unstable unless you have something in there to keep it from just shearing almost instantly. It's not a lever. It's not a spring. It doesn't propel you forward. It's just there to keep the foam from falling apart. That's thing one. Thing two, like I mentioned before, foam is tuned to a weight and speed. If you are that weight running at that speed, it will be good for you. If not, it's not. You are not that weight and speed. I guarantee, especially those Olympic level and national level runners. There's another part, which is if somebody showed up, I'll do this for you. Let's imagine, for the sake of argument, you line up at a race and someone shows up in some radically new shoe and they just crush it that day. What are you going to do tomorrow?
Buy the damn shoe.
Exactly. So there's that component where people are going, oh my God, everyone's setting records. Well, yeah, but people were setting records before too. But what people have realized is one of the things that they have a limit on for any official race is the height. It has to be under a certain height because me and a couple other guys came to the conclusion that what's happening, that foam in those shoes is better than the other crap they've been using. It's a little more responsive. Nike didn't add where it says it gives you the feeling of propelling you forward. And it does give you that feeling because as your foot is, especially if your heel striking and coming off, if as your heel's coming off the ground, you feel the foam expanding and it kind of taps you in the heel. But of course, it's not touching the ground. So it's not doing anything. It feels like it's doing something. It's not. So the height and the fact that your cadence hasn't changed. So speed is steps per minute, cadence times stride length. So if your steps per minute don't change, the only way you get faster is with a bigger stride length. How do you have a bigger stride length? Get slightly higher off the ground. Now, there's a problem with getting slightly higher off the ground. You become unbalanced. The higher you get off the ground, the less balance you have. And so the preponderance of ankle sprains, wrist breaks, and clavicle breaks from people wearing these shoes, through the roof.
So that basically answers my question. And I think you've really clarified so much of this in a big way. So, you know, one of the things I've just, needless to say, I've learned so much right now. It's insane. I could sit here forever with you. So I'm going to dub you a repeat offender, which means that you'll be back again and again. No, seriously, because people, you know, it's going to be spring soon. People, oh, I think I'm going to run. And I'm like, oh, you put some thought into this so you totally understand what's really going on here. I kind of learned through the school of hard knocks because honestly, we didn't have a lot of the science
right
as I was coming through the system. And a lot of people are kind of, you know, do it yourself. They go, I don't know. I like what she's wearing and she looks good when she's running. And I think I'm going to do that. It's like, whoa, wait a minute. And I highly recommend that you look up the YouTube that features Stephen Sachin because it is absolutely fabulous. Just watching him go through the whole walking thing. What it also reminds me of is when I kind of pivoted from marathon to triathlon, we always say with triathlon, those are the people with ADD or something, because it's like, oh my God, you know, I can't really concentrate on the swim so long. This is like boring. Oh, biking. Okay, we do that. And then I'm bored. And oh my God, then there's running. And so, you know, we're always laughing about that. But when I pivoted over you know, I had no problem with the bike and very strong legs and all the rest of it. And obviously I'd been running, but the swim, I've always been a good swimmer, but I didn't realize that in the century between my actually having done some decent laps and then finally going back into going and doing masters, that the technique had changed.
Right.
And oh my God, I'm going to tell you right now, it took me 5 months to learn to do the glide.
But here's
you
the
know.
Kick. The technique never changed. It's just that the people who were doing it naturally were the ones who were winning all the competitions. And
you're absolutely correct on that one.
It just never made it down to the people who needed it.
And we were doing the windmill, you know, right. It was like, you know, you're round and round and you look like you're flailing in the middle of the ocean and it's really not a great look. So instead, what you learn is to do the glide and you have to move your body differently and you're becoming one with the water. The first time I tried it, I mean, I cursed like a sailor. I was like, this is going to kill me. And it took me 5 months of practice until that became my default. So what I'm telling you is that when you're looking to switch over to consider experimenting with the Zero shoes, by the way, the Zero is spelled as it's an X-E-R-O, not a Z. It's an X-E-R-O shoes. Then, you know, be patient because your body's like, okay, well, excuse me, what are you doing? I've been doing one thing all this time and now we're going to do this. So what's up with that?
Let me say a couple things about that. First of all, when people say, well, how long is it going to take? I go, I don't know. I don't know who you are. So some people, they literally, from not letting their brain feel things in their feet, their brain has literally changed shape. It has de-differentiated. And so it's just not receiving information because if your brain wasn't getting it, it's like, why waste the energy waiting for it? And it literally changes shape. So those people, I say, you just need to start walking on some unpleasant surfaces, not unpleasant, just, you know, stimulating, so that your brain starts to wake up again, those neural circuits start to refire, and your brain literally changes back to the right shape. Some people, they just don't have great proprioceptive skills. So if I say put your arm parallel to the ground, they'll be pointing towards the ceiling or towards the floor and not know the difference. My favorite version of that is someone who swears they don't overstride, they don't reach out with their foot in front of them. And I go, send me a video, and there's the video of them overstriding. And I literally had one guy say to me as we looked at the video together, yeah, but I don't do that. Dude, it's a video of you that you just sent of you.
Well, you know, it's that whole proprioception thing.
Correct.
In a big way. But again, like I said to everyone, just go over and check out the YouTubes with Stephen Sashen, and that's spelled S-A-S-H-E-N. Please go to his website, which is Sashen.com.
No. Don't go there. Go to ZeroShoes.com. Nope. Now, my personal website is just there. I don't know why.
I thought it was kind of interesting, but
I haven't changed it in like 10 years. So,
okay. Which makes it even more interesting. So this is a little history lesson. So please go to Zero Shoes. That's X-E-R-O shoes and check out that women's HFS and look at the colors on this sucker. It comes in three different things, but I mean, two of them are like super colorful, and get your little mitts off it because I need to desperately find where the heck this thing is. All right, listen, we got to wrap it up.
Okay.
I can sit here forever. I told you, you're a repeat offender. Stephen, I can't thank you enough for being on the Herb podcast. This has been a boatload of fun.
Oh, no, my pleasure. I'm looking forward to what's next.
All right, and I want to thank my sponsor, Solaray Vitamins, minerals and herbs rooted in nature, and the new Her Life Stages product. Scope it all out at solaray.com. That's S-O-L-A-R-A-Y.com. Take a moment to leave us a review because guess what? We just hang out and wait to hear from you. That's what we do in life. Now, for everyone out there, this has been a production of Podcast Health. Remember, your time in this world is limited. We all know that, reality check. But the things you can do with that time, like checking out the barefoot walking, are not. So get on out there, seize the day, carpe diem, and carpe your feet too while you're at it. Thanks for listening, everyone.